Welcome to She Is Never Lost, But At Least She Has Wine, a podcast made just for you. Your host is Felicia Stitzel, world traveler and influencer, professional photographer, sommelier, Navy veteran, and mom. Tune in every Thursday for solo episodes where she shares her life story and a wine highlight. Pour yourself a glass and let's dive in.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of She's Never Lost, But At Least She Has Wine. This week, I'm really, really excited to share with you guys a new form of episodes. Normally, I'm always talking about a travel thing, a life story, some epiphany that I had that I thought would be relevant and sharing in kind of a personal journey aspect, guests, things along those lines. But this particular episode is going to strictly be about wine. I'm really excited to share this one with you because obviously as we talk so much about different smells of wine and different tastes and atmospheres that you would find within your glass, it's also important to have a little knowledge and understanding about that as well. So first, of course, I'm going to start with the wine of the week. This one, I'm sorry, it's not my first time having this one. It's actually a household favorite. And when I say household, that means including my husband, even though he doesn't do wine. Like, talk about air quotes like a mofo. He doesn't do wine. Every once in a while, I can convince him to maybe get outside of his gin and tonic for something a little special or different, something I really want to share with him. But normally, he sticks to his gin and tonic. This one, however, when I know he's coming home from deployment, I have to make sure there's always at least a bottle or two inside my cellar. So this is a Spanish wine. You can actually find it back in the States, though. Don't worry. I'm telling you about it. Look for the beautiful blue bottle, and it has like a Moroccan-looking window frame on it. It's called Araba, A-R-A-B-E, Araba, and it is a Sauvignon Blanc. The first time I ever had this wine, it totally took me by surprise, which is part of the reason why I want to share it with you. Most people think that Sauvignon Blancs always are super acidic, they're crisp, they're kind of light in body, or they're just the acidity overwhelms them, and they don't really tend to like Sauvignon Blancs unless they're in a blend. Well, that is part of the reason why this one took me for a surprise, because when I smelled it, I was like, there's no way that this is Sauvignon Blanc. Actually, what really surprised me was that the first bottle that I had ever seen being opened, it looked like it was like bubbling. So that one first super threw me off. And then second, when I went to go smell it, I was like, well, it's like honeysuckle and honeydew and cantaloupe and pineapple and if all of those, because that all, yep. Still holds up, except there is a little bit of citrus fruit in there as well, like one of those little cutie oranges. It has kind of like an after smell of the rinds of one of those, like, you know, when you peel the orange. A full orange has a very different smell to me, but like those little cuties, it has like a little sweet and a little citrusy on there. I don't know, maybe that's just me, but this definitely has a little citrusy on it. But still, all of those, the honeydew and the honeysuckle, all of those really, really stand out. Another thing that really surprised me is how sweet it was. Now, normally, I don't have a palate anymore for super, super sweet wines. I do feel like every sweet wine, though, whether you are an experienced drinker or a basic wine drinker and you don't know a lot about wines or you haven't explored a lot of wines, sweet wines always has a place in our wine history. For me, I enjoy a sweet wine every once in a while, obviously, because I want to make sure that my palate stays diverse. So I have to ensure that I'm not just drinking the same thing over and over and over again, because as a wine professional, I have to be able to have an expanded and diverse palate to help me pick up notes and subtleties, going through wine tests and blind tastings. Obviously, all of those things require my nose and my palate to have a lot of diversity in their training. So that was one reason why this also surprised me, is because, once again, Sauvignon Blancs don't generally have the reputation of being sweet wines. Like I said, they're a little bit fuller in body, higher in alcohol content, but way more acidity, but not normally on the sweet level. So that's one another reason why this one is really such a crowd pleaser, because on a beautifully hot summer day here in the south of Spain, I'll tell you what, there is nothing more refreshing than pulling out the beautiful blue bottle, cracking her open, and enjoying the bottle with my husband or with my friends. So let me just share this one just a little bit while I take a sip. Oh, so obviously vintages change from year to year. So the flavors change a little bit. Being that this is going into my third year here, obviously I've been able to taste through a couple vintages of this already. So the first one was super sweet. This one, I like it because this year for the vintage, it's changed a bit. It has a little bit more bubbly on the taste. Like, it almost feels like Pop Rocks on my tongue. It has a lot of that kind of bubbly Pop Rock feel on my tongue. And then it has like a kind of a semi-sweet aftertaste. So for me, if I was to compare this to another wine, it would be very similar to Prosecco. Not as much as that bite that Prosecco can give you being a bubbly, but this wine does have a lot of those similar characteristics as I would find in something like a Prosecco. All right, so now that we've covered the wine just a little bit, obviously I do a little bit more detective work when I do these tastings, but because I know I love this wine and because I know I've drank this wine a lot and can tell you a lot about it, I don't have to do as much detective work with it. So now that we have been able to dive into this bottle and to share that, let me share with you about diving into another aspect of your bottle, which is the subject of our podcast today, which is how to tell if your wine is corked. So if you have been an avid wine drinker over the last, you know, couple years, at some point there's a very good chance that you have opened a bottle and you poured it into the glass and it just smells weird. Like, it smells funky. It looks, smells like somebody opened up their boots and took off their dirty socks and they just got like real, real bad, nasty feet. It might not always be that abrupt in your face, but there are a lot of ways to tell whether or not your wine is corked. So first, let's talk about what corked wine isn't. First, corked wine tends to be, it's a bacteria that affects the cork, obviously. That's why it's called corked. Figure that one out for you. Good job. But this normally happens, you'll find this in obviously non-synthetic corks. So all of the natural ones that you get made out of the trees, not the plastic ones that you see, or even from the screw tops. So if you, those tend to be the bottles that you buy, this really shouldn't apply to you. There is a very, 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 very low chance that with a synthetic cork, you will find that your wine has become corked. Now, I say that there is still a chance because if you age your wines improperly, aka on top of your cabinets inside your kitchen where the heat fluctuates and the temperatures and the light fluctuate a lot, you're going to get a bad wine. That is very different from being a corked wine. It still is possible, but it's highly unlikely. So like I said, it only tends to affect about 5% of cork and closed bottles. So obviously, yeah, like I said, there you might have ran into one or two, or if you do a lot of wine studying like me, a few more than that. We're going to go over real quick about what corked wine isn't. So corked wine is not when you get those little floaties in your wine after you've poured it, or the little wine crystals down at the bottom of your drink or down at the bottom of your glass. Those aren't those. Those are not wine being corked at all. The little crystals are actually called tartrate, and it's created naturally by as a byproduct of some of the wines and how they've been aged or how they've been filtered. Totally harmless. Or if you get the little bits of cork in your wine, it's because you were like me a couple years ago who just sucked at opening bottles of wine with a corkscrew. Obviously, practice makes perfect, so that's how I've gotten a lot better. But that's part of the reason why when I first got into the wine industry, I actually bought one of those little air popper wine bottle openers. Definitely recommend them. So, but that's me. And that's part of the reason I still have that air popper just because it's fast, it's easy, and it makes you feel like you're opening champagne every time you open a bottle with like a big old pow!
It's fun.
And also, we're going to clear up a myth here. You cannot tell if your wine is corked based off of smelling the cork. You might smell something like wet cardboard, but that's after you've opened the bottle and you've now released all of that air that you've then pulled up with the cork itself. It has nothing to do with smelling the cork. Smelling the cork just makes you smell wet cork. Okay, so clear that one up. And then, like I said earlier, if you use a screw cap or a synthetic cork, your wine can't be corked. It can be cooked, not corked. So now we're going to go over a little bit of like how this happens. So for those who may not know, cork is actually a natural product from trees. Very cool living here in Spain and next to Portugal. Cork is a very, very big deal here, especially in Portugal. And what a lot of people don't know actually is that cork is one of the very few, if I'm not mistaken, the only, I might be wrong on that, so don't shoot me if I'm wrong on that. I am admitting that there's a chance I'm wrong on that because I am not a forest person for studying forestry. I am a wine person who studies wine. But it's one of the only, if not the only, self-healing tree. So they strip off pieces of the bark, which is the cork itself. They harvest the cork, and then the tree will actually grow that back in the exact same thickness and manner as it was before you stripped it. There's a very, very long heritage of precise training on how to strip the bark off of a cork tree to ensure that you don't damage the tree, because that's the big thing. These trees are becoming more and more rare as more land is being taken up by other agricultural or cityscapes. So these areas are starting to become way more protected. And so the training that it goes into ensuring that these trees survive is one that is passed down from, you know, families and cities and villages that specialize in harvesting this. And it's passed down generation to generation, especially like places like here in Spain and Portugal. So cork obviously is a very big deal, but because it is a natural product that's taken from trees and depending on, you know, sanitation practices, it's a pore. You know, the tree bark has all of these pores that has the ability to build up bacteria at some point. And so depending on the different levels of sanitation from the point that the wine grapes come into the winery and from the time that the cork is removed from the tree all the way up to the final process where the cork is then inserted into the bottle and then sealed with the foil, there's a lot of chances where a bacteria at some point can latch onto that particular piece of cork and then, of course, grow and then taint whatever bottle it goes into. And it just is something that just happens. You know, this is totally a natural thing. It has nothing to do with the ability of the winemakers or the winery. So stand down, people. It's not their fault. But it is something that does happen. So cork taint is what happens when an enzymatic reaction between the chlorophenol, which is a natural flaw that happens inside of cork, and a fungus combine. So when these substances, they interact with one another, they actually create a compound called THC, which is what you smell. THC is the same kind of smell that you smell when you open up a Band-Aid or Bactine. Those are the same, like, just so you can start training your nose on what THC smells like. So that way, if you put your nose in your glass, like I hope you guys are doing when you're smelling your wine, to check for things like, I don't know, cork taint, or to smell those beautiful flavors, that's a kind of smell that you should be looking for, that if it is tainted, that's what it's going to smell like, is that THC, Bactine, Band-Aid kind of smell. So some people do think, though, that THC can affect the actual flavor of the wine itself, the physical compounds of it. However, most scientists, as they continue studying this, they just believe that it really is blocking your ability to smell the fruit. Because our ear, nose, and throat are all connected to one another, obviously when THC, when you take it in and you inhale it, it is going to start coating all of your olfactory senses that are all connected between your ear, nose, and throat. And then that basically puts off this like siren alarm in your olfactory bulb that's like, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad. And then everything that you're going to taste and smell is going to be bad. So that's the power of THC. It doesn't actually, from what scientists are continuing to study, is that it doesn't actually affect the physical compound of the wine. It's just, it so taints and overwhelms, thus the name again, it overwhelms all of your senses that it makes everything taste and smell terrible. So now, how can you tell if a wine is corked? Now, we talked a little bit about the THC smell and how it can smell like Bactane, but it can be, sometimes it can be really hard to tell if your wine is corked if you've never smelled it before. Once you have smelled it, man, you know. Like, if I'm talking to anybody in the crowd who has smelt this smell before, like, you know. So one way to decipher whether or not a wine is corked is, of course, to smell it and taste it and try it. Obviously, that's how we go through and we pick up any of these training techniques, is to smell, to see, to taste, to swirl, all of these things that go into proper wine tasting. Typically, a wine will obviously smell generally very fruit forward, but if you're starting to pick up any kind of ughs, like really weird ones too, like we're talking wet cardboard and moldy shoes and another smell that you can tell if your cork is tanked or the THC is like smelling like wet dog. Like, who wants to smell like wet dog or drink something that smells like wet dog? Other things can also be like tar or different kinds of bad sulfurs, like burnt rubber. So all of these obviously tend to not make wine smell very appealing, right? If you open a bottle of wine, you pour it in your glass and it's like, wow, who let in a wet dog, and you don't even own a dog? Yeah, there's probably a problem, right? This is all very subjective when it comes to your nose. Like, these are very simple guidelines that can kind of point you in the right direction. But if you're starting to smell a wine and it just smells like funk, and not like the good dance music kind, like it smells like funk. These are just some words and adjectives to kind of help you understand what that funk might be, or what, like, if you have that, like, God, it smells so bad, but I can't put my finger on it. These are just kind of some suggestions from people like me who have smelt a lot of wine and have smelled a few that smell like wet dog or cardboard or chemical burns, like burning plastic. Like, some of these things, man, they just smell bad. So that's a really good way to kind of help pick out whether or not your wine is corked. Like I said, another one that's like tends to be with most people, because most people have smelled a Band-Aid or the Bactine smell at some point, is the fact that it does smell like a Band-Aid. So that's kind of a good way to start. Or if it just doesn't smell like anything. Now, I know, don't just start pouring out your wine if suddenly you've opened like 6 bottles and they all don't smell. Maybe you should go get a COVID test instead. So obviously things are a little bit more difficult to explain that right now, because our sense of taste and smell is so affected by this terrible, terrible pandemic. But just preparing you for all aspects of all of your wine enjoying and education experiences. So you open a bottle of wine and it's tainted. What do you do with it? You can drink it. It's not poisonous. It just doesn't taste or smell as good. It's one of those, like, you could plug your nose and maybe drink it if you're like super, super desperate. Obviously, depending on how much you've spent on it, I would say either maybe to return it. Like, if you bought it either at a restaurant or at a grocery store and you take it back with, like, don't empty it first because they're not going to believe you. But if you put the cork back in it, you take it back in and you say, this bottle is tainted, like it has got cork tape to it, I would like to return it or exchange it for a different bottle. Obviously, I mean, it's the same kind of experience, like if you were to go to a really, really fancy like steakhouse and you spent a ton of money on this like super, super fancy steak and it wasn't cooked the way that you wanted it to. Well, you would send it back because you probably spent $100 on that steak. And you want it to have the full experience, which is you want your money's worth out of it, right? It's the same concept. If you don't like it, and for a fault, it's very different if, and I'm not just going out like, if you don't like your wine, just go return it and claim cork taint on everything. Obviously, there's going to be some bottles that at some point you may run into that you're like, oh, I did not like this one. Either share it with somebody else to see if they also have that same reaction, to see if it's you or if it's just, you know, something you don't like, or to give it off to somebody else that may like it. I've had many people give me bottles of wine because they open it, they're like, oh, It does not, it's not something that I would like to drink, but they didn't want to waste it, so they gave it to me. But going back to the steak concept is, if you don't like it, return it. Because if you're spending money on something, like especially with, if it's a fancy bottle of wine and you've spent a decent amount of money on it, not only should the store know that they might have a problem with cork taint in the store from a producer, or just for something to be aware of, customer service comes into play, you apologize profusely, return your stuff, you get a new bottle. Once again, don't try returning an empty bottle. I don't think that they're going to believe you. Just throwing it out there. Obviously, if you don't want to deal with this kind of stuff, the best way to avoid dealing with cork taint is to not buy bottles of wine that have cork in it. Ultimately, screw caps is, you know, ultimately the fastest way to know whether or not your wine bottle has a cork in it or not, of it being natural or synthetic. When you start buying ones that you actually still have to pop a cork out of, you have to open it or take the foil off first before you find out that it has either a synthetic or a natural cork in it. So if you don't want to deal with it and you're afraid of dealing with it, then just, you can just go and buy some screw caps and you'll be fine. It's one of the things, though, that inevitably, just like when you go to a grocery store, you buy a great batch of blueberries and, you know, the bottom, like it's right inside the middle of it, there's mold. You know, there is no perfect anything. So I just wanted to give you guys a little wine industry insight on what cork taint is, how to explain it, how to break it down, what you should do about it, and ultimately to help arm you guys with some solid knowledge and information. Obviously, if you guys want any more follow-up information on this, you can go to the show notes and click the blog post that I have posted in there. I did follow this up with a blog post, so you guys can always like and look and save that away for in case you need to go back to it for some good solid wine information on cork taint. Or if you guys want to learn more about wine industry stuff along these lines, you can always sign up for my Basic to Bougie wine course, where I give you guys a full breakdown of everything that I have learned in the wine industry, from my wine 101 class all the way up to my level 2, for everything up to my level 2 of my Wine and Spirit Education Trust certificate, which is also known as the West Awards or Sommelier certification. So that information is also in the show notes if you guys want to learn, like, love, and sip your way through more wine education like this. It's a fun interactive program with all kinds of information, all the way from how to taste, what to taste, wine pairings, a little education here and there about history, and so much more. So don't forget to also follow my Instagram pages. I've got the Backpacker Mom, which gives you wine and travel. And then, of course, the Basic to Bougie, which gives you more about wine information and education specific stuff. So all of those links are in the show notes below. And be sure to subscribe, stay tuned, and listen in next week. Cheers.